Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And it's Sounding Board.
Sounding Board. It's Sounding Board. Ba-ba. Sounding Board. Sounding Board. Ba-ba. Yeah.
Cool. Oh, Oscar's leaving.
Bye.
How was your day, Maureen?
It was pretty frustrating. Our espresso machine was on the fritz a little bit. A technician came in and was like taking apart our espresso machine as we got a bunch of orders in, which was a lot. Mm-hmm. That always seems to happen to me on shifts where the espresso machine isn't working. Mm. Like the tech always comes when I'm working and always comes when like I'm on bar.
Oh.
And so like I always have to do a dance around the tech. And it's always, like, a way more complicated issue. Like,
and this it's is usually, like, during a rush you've mentioned before,
right? Yeah. Like, the tech inevitably will show up during a rush.
Right.
And it was our only rush.
Yeah.
And the tech was there for it.
Yeah.
And at one point, I got, like, three things that I needed to steam milk for. And I, like, pulled the lever to start to turn on the steam wand. And it wasn't happening. And I, like, turned my head toward him. And I was like, did you power down the machine? And I probably said it in a really mean way. And he was like, yeah, sorry, I need it. And I was like, okay, you need to tell me the second it comes back on.
I was like, yeah.
Okay. And then I told, and then I like, yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's also probably the thing where when you're in this situation, like, it seems way more hectic.
It was pretty hectic. I had to make like 4 drinks.
Sounds like the way you said that made it sound like you had to make 4 drinks the whole shift.
Oh, no. I made like 40 drinks the whole shift.
No, I mean, I just thought it was fun. I just thought it was so hectic. I made like 4 drinks.
Oh, no. No, in that, in all at once.
Right. Yeah. At the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Simultaneously.
Simultaneously.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
How was your day?
It was pretty good. I got a lot of stuff done today.
You made banana bread.
I did make banana bread. I prepped a pizza dough. I was very Betty Homemaker today.
Uh-huh.
I had the day off.
Change the cat litter.
I did change the cat litter. I did change. They shit a lot. I can always tell when it needs to, because Oscar's pretty neurotic. And so, like, he's, I don't know if you've noticed this. I think you slept through this. But there was one point where he just, like, was scratching at one of the mirrors. Oh. And he just goes, and doesn't really stop is the thing. And you think, like, he's going to stop. Like, this cannot stand. Like, this cannot be my life tonight. Like, this can't continue.
This can't be the rest of my life.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't not. You got to stop at some point. It's just. So, yeah, that was my night. But then today, I mean, I'm glad. Something that I'm really excited about is I've figured out. I've got like 5 article ideas running right now.
That's great.
People I'm like waiting on quotes for, just because I'm gonna do them. I'm gonna do them not as painstakingly as before. So we're gonna be putting out more articles monthly, which I'm really excited about.
Well, and you asked me to write an article.
I did. Yeah. I did. Do you want that to be our first story we talk about in the proper show?
Sure.
Yeah. So. It's in reference to the thing that, like, kind of sparked the fat shaming thing recently. Topic was that post that went up by Dude. Did you actually see the post?
I did. I did see the post. So it was a man who married a woman who is, like, a size 12 or something like that. And he was like, I love my curvy wife.
It made me, like angry to my... The reason I asked you if you actually read it or not is because I didn't read it. I know what... I got the context of it. But, like, I just saw the picture of it. And, like, I think I read the first sentence and I was like, whew. And I was like, I can't actually do this.
So, basically, he... And some... some news outlet did a a parody of it, which was like, I love my disgusting pig wife.
Saw that. Didn't like Lindy West or someone share that?
Someone, I don't know. But that's basically like literally one of the sentences was, sure, my wife may not be considered for Cosmo, but I think she should be. I'm like, there's like many layers to that sentence alone. Just because there is so much body shaming.
I know. Where do you go? Do you go to the body shaming route? Do you go the masculine, like, perspective
route? Do you go the modeling industry route?
Yeah,
do you
the patriarchal ownership of women route? Like, yeah.
Just that sentence alone. Yeah. And it's a whole thing. And to top it off, she's not even fat. She's not even fat. Yeah. she's literally a size 12.
Yeah.
The average of the U.S. of an American woman is a size 16 to 18.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just upsetting. Well, and also, there seems to be this odd resurgence of fat shaming people, and I've talked about this before. But this man, like, fancies himself a hero for, you know. Oh, and also he, part of what he says is, I've always gotten a lot of grief from my friends for being attracted to thicker girls, but I never cared. Like, first of all, your friends sound like douchebags.
Yeah.
Maybe get better friends. I don't know. And also, your wife's not thick.
Yeah. Yeah.
She looked so shockingly not fat.
That I think was the most, because I remember reading the first paragraph sentence and I was like, what is the point of this? And then I just looked at the photo and I was like, this doesn't match up. What are you saying?
My initial reaction was I looked at her and it was something along the lines of, because it's gotten to the point where I look at a woman in a swimsuit and I immediately am like, I don't know. I'm trying to think how to describe this. I'm either like, I either go her or who cares? Like, oh, she's thin. Of course.
Oh,
she's,
the old yeah. Go her or who cares meter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like, that old chestnut. No, but like if I see a fat woman in a bikini, I'm like, fuck yeah, go her. But then if I see like a picture of a thin woman in a bikini, I'm like, next. Like, who cares? Like, fuck it. Like, of course you're wearing that. Why wouldn't you wear that? But whenever I see like a, and so when I saw the picture, I was like, it kind of like hit in the middle,
yeah.
You know? But then I saw like, I love my fat wife. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's all a horrible, disgusting mess. And, there's more to that. I don't have my phone in front of me, but I could pull it up. I could, like, go line by line, but I'm choosing not to.
No, I moment. Think that's pretty fair. So, here's my question for you. Who do you think his intended audience was? Like other women? Like, do you think it was, like, or do you think it was, like, dudes? Like, he was like, you know what? I'm gonna do one for the dudes. I'm gonna school these dudes right now.
Honestly, I think he was doing it to school the dudes.
Yeah, think so, too.
Because there were lines in there. I think one of the things he said was basically like making a case for fucking a fat girl. Like, in defense of the fat girl.
Yeah. Jesus. I guess that's the thing that's most upsetting to me about it is the male gaze aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like, I am really frustrated with brochalism lately.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely so. Because it's like, can you get your fucking male gaze out of my, like, socialism memes, please? Like, we don't need another meme about, like, what's the thing? There was some meme that got posted of, like, the girl with, like, the way too much visible cleavage thing. Like, obviously, this is objectification. And then a dude with, like, a empty bubble. And it was, like, fill in the blank of what you would say to this girl to get her in bed. And it's like, who is this for? This doesn't have anything to do with politics. Because the thing is, it's like, I come to a place for politics for politics. I know a lot of people don't like coming to places for politics, but like, I don't know. Get your male gaze out of my
shit. Of my socialism.
Yeah. Not even just that. I just like, male gaze is so overwhelmingly like part of our daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Game of Thrones. We can't even appreciate the John... Oh, shit, I shouldn't... Never mind. I almost just, like, completely spoiled something. But, like, I just... There was a moment between two male characters in Game of Thrones where they felt the need to comment on the appearance of a female character. The reason I'm trying to, like, sound like... It sounds like I'm trying to be PC or something. I don't need that to be doing that. That's not, like, what I care that much about. But I'm trying to not, like, give any spoilers for people. But I was just like, this isn't necessary. Like, so far, you've set up this, like, really female-heavy, like, extremely diverse female characters thing. Can we not have every male character be a fucking shit show?
Yeah.
Anyway. The other thing that's been happening a lot is people fat-shaming J.B. Pritzker and Donald Trump, and that's something we've talked about. We haven't talked about J.B. Pritzker on the show, though, and I think that's
great. I think we did talk about J.B. Pritzker and how he's getting fat-shamed, because we talked about it with Chris Christie, and then you brought up J.B. Pritzker, and I was like, he's fat? I don't even know.
Yeah. I just see a lot of... I don't know. I'm like... As I'm trying to keep up with Illinois politics and Chicago politics and stuff, I'm just seeing, like, some of the people that live in Illinois, man, are, like, some of the most vile... Whew, like, somebody... I think Emily Cox shared an article about... So this actually basically segues into my next topic, gorgeously, which is she shared the article about Rahm Emanuel. Specifically the one where he was... suing Trump, which, for those that don't know, the Trump administration is looking to defund sanctuary cities. And how that looks is dependent on the city. I think a lot of it has to do with public safety funding. I know specifically for Chicago. Well, we'll get more to... The main topic that I actually want to talk about is just Rahm and just kind of like... unpacking what it means, what this Chicago mayor means specifically. I've done a little bit of research in preparation for this episode. So Emma shared it. And so I think the thing that's like interesting when talking about it is like prefacing it with like some of the people that like the people that like the Chicago mayor Facebook page are like Islamophobic, like extremely Islamophobic. Like, people were like, oh, isn't he a Muslim or something? And, like, how could you do this? Like, let these illegals in? Like, it was just crazy. And, like, maybe it's specifically because the language of the Chicago mayor post was so anti-Trump that it like, dog whistled to... Sorry, that was Oscar. It, like, dog whistled to all, like, nearby Islamophobes or something.
Do you think that they have a bat signal?
Yeah. It's anytime that anybody talks about, like... sanctuary cities or like not building the wall, all of a sudden you get like 15 angry Twitter eggs like go find the nearest place to you know, be anonymous and call people like hate words.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I saw that, and it made me really start to think about, because, you know, Rahm gets, I mean, we've talked about this personally, but Rahm gets a lot of flack from both sides of the, you know.
Well, he's not really pleasing either side.
No.
Like, he's too liberal for conservatives, and he's too much of a douchebag for people on the left.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of what I've feel like I've learned about Rahm is that I think what he is he's a center Democrat that is like in no way, shape, or form compromising with the right. Like he is actively like against the idea of the right. But
Oscar's doing a precarious piano thing.
Well, I was trying to not get him to play it, but now the piano is weird and I'm worried he's gonna break it or something. Can you? What was I talking about? Oh, well, so that was something that, I mean, that's kind of the whole gimmick of this suing Trump thing is it's just like, Rahm was chief of staff for Barack Obama. And that was one of the ways that he became famous. I mean, but he was only chief of staff for like a year. And he left for a couple reasons. The first was because he wanted to run for mayor of Chicago against the incumbent Daley. Also, he had a terrible reputation in the White House. Like, internally, he basically was like the... He would call one of the admirals, Daley, asking about, like, the bombs we sent into the Middle East, being like, who'd we get today? Jeez. Like, and so it's not so much like, because Joe Biden, I think, would get a little memo sheet of like all of the people that have died in the overnight or whatever. And that's one thing, but it's another thing entirely. The reputation that he had was his, like, it was a joke to him. Like the way that he would talk, like he was so cavalier about it. He got a really bad reputation from that. Also, he apparently, let me find that specific quote. Yeah, at a January 2010 closed door meeting in the White House with liberal activists, Emanuel called them, and this is ableist language, fucking, I don't even want to say it, I don't really like to say this word, retarded, for planning to run TV ads attacking conservative Democrats who didn't support Obama's healthcare overhaul. After their remarks were quoted in a front-page story of the Wall Street Journal, and after he was criticized by Sarah Palin, Emanuel apologized to organizations for the mentally handicapped for using the word. Which I didn't know that about that either. And so, like, those were the kind of, like, few scandals that basically led to his resignation as chief of staff for the Obama White House. He also was the Secretary of Finance for Bill Clinton. Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting kind of like in the bits and pieces that I've learned about Bill Clinton coming from like the far left perspective. It's like weirdly not super surprising to me because that's kind of what a lot of far left liberals looking at Rahm felt about him even when he was with Barack, was that he was this center Democrat, but not willing to compromise with the right at all. And just like aggressive and like shitty and like honestly it reminds me of like Bill Maher.
That's what I have to say to that.
Yeah. So there was that. So then after that, he ran for Chicago mayor. And the next kind of like big highlight of Rahm as a political figure was the Laquan McDonald shooting. Which, for those that don't know, Laquan McDonald was a black, I think he was 17. 17-year-old Laquan McDonald was shot by the police. The famous line in a few songs and stuff, 16 shots, that's specifically about Laquan McDonald. That's what Daniel Ray Scott's song was about, was Laquan McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
Van Dyke was the, I don't remember the officer's first name, but it was his last name. For a year, Rahm held this, the footage of the shooting. Something like, he withheld the video of the shooting for about like a year.
I remember this.
Mm-hmm. And, they didn't investigate it. until the Federal Justice Department announced an investigation into the operations of the Chicago Police Department, and that Emmanuel opposed that federal investigation, like, publicly. And so that actually really, basically all of these things, like my primer on Rahm Emanuel, I'm like super open to people like writing in more stuff about Rahm Emanuel on the show. We are a Chicago local show. I think it's super important that we have a really firm understanding of what the Chicago mayor is up to, you know? I mean, that's why the Chuy Garcia campaign was so effective, was because, I mean, he is just not what progressives feel the Democratic Party should stand for. So that all sets up really well this story about the CPS budget, and specifically with regards to Rahner. So, like, that's... Oh, well, that's the second part of the story. I'm sorry, y'all. I'm jumping around. The first part of the story was the Trump suing of Trump for the sanctuary cities.
Rahm's suing of Trump.
Because Chicago, he wants to keep Chicago a sanctuary city. Specifically for burn grants. But those burn grants, and I tweeted about this. If anyone has the displeasure of following me on Twitter, they saw that I, like, gathered these two tweets. A lot of empty silences today.
Yeah.
As I'm pulling stuff up. Well, do you have any thoughts?
I don't know. When is he up for re-election?
2019.
19?
Yeah, he was elected in 2015. 4-year terms.
That's weird.
Re-elected in 15. Yeah, the Chicago specifically uses the burn grants, the ones that Donald Trump is denying because of Chicago's sanctuary city status, to fund SWAT equipment, police vehicles, radios, and tasers. And then on top of that, Rahm has been tweeting about wanting to get people onto the force because it's a well-paying job and is like an option for low-income folks. You know, I don't know. I think a lot of people have different views of the police. I know for me, it was specifically with Chicago, there are a lot of, like, institutional policing issues, specifically for African-American folks, and frankly, like, there's a strong case for the militarization of the police state in Chicago. You know, I remember I marched personally for Eric Garner in Chicago when that happened. And, you know, the riot gear is no joke. And, yeah, I mean, like, that's a super not nuanced and, like, not... It's not really my experience, so I'm not, like, trying to talk for that. But we should really have some people on the show to talk about it. Anyway, I generally, like...
I guess my take on this is that I think that police funding is a really nuanced issue.
Yeah.
I think that when it comes to police funding, it has to do... It's important to note where the money is going.
Yeah.
Because when I first heard... Because when I first heard that Donald Trump was potentially...
denying funding for police.
Right.
Yeah, I remember...
When I first heard that, I was like, that's really shitty, because a big reason, besides the institutional racism and the questionable training practices, that policemen are acting in the way that they are, is that they're working long hours because they're understaffed.
Yeah.
And they're also, they don't have money in the budget to pay for overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So they're underpaid, they're working really long hours, and they're trained in a way that they respond to fear with violence.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the whole that was the whole thing that happened in Ferguson with Daryl Wilson. Was that the officer's name?
I don't remember.
The officer in Ferguson, the giant shooting case that happened, specifically quoted that he was in fear for his life. Mm-hmm. And that is like a very real thing in the force. And so you have to ask yourself, like, is that who we want on the force? Is someone that's going to react to fear with violence?
Well, and I mean, but that's how they're trained.
Right.
And so it's not even that that was a fault in his character. That's how he was trained. That's how any police officer would have reacted, because that's what they're told, is that if you fear for your life or if you fear for someone else's life, you use your firearm.
Yeah, and de-escalation is not something that's taught anymore. And for the most part, I mean, like, police training is getting shorter and shorter because of the fact that it's underfunded. To the point where police officers are only given one or two responses maybe to most situations. And, you know, when you have an oversaturated black population, that sounds terrible. What I mean is, because of the nature of the segregated neighborhoods of Chicago,
it's overcrowded.
Yeah, right.
Oversaturated.
Yeah, I don't know.
Too many.
Well, I think saturation still implies like a density. I meant specifically a density.
You know what we should do? A purge night.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, that'll work. No, but
I'm so shockingly kidding.
I know. No, and I think that the matter of funding the police, I mean, if it were going to, like, healthcare or better pay or better working conditions or shorter hours, like, that's one thing. But if you're just, like,
Or overtime pay.
Right. Or if you're just taking the funding that you're getting from these burn grants and just turning them into
weaponry.
First off, more cops, and then more weaponry. And that's like the two major things that you're focusing
on. I'm fine with more cops. I'm fine with more cops as long as it means shorter hours for those cops.
But if it doesn't, what if it doesn't mean shorter hours for those cops?
I mean, if you hire more people at your restaurant, there are less hours to give.
I don't think it works like that in the police force. I don't think it's the same kind of, I mean, and I'd be interested in actually talking to someone that's worked with a police union, or like someone that actually knows police working conditions.
I can't imagine that if there were more cops, that the hours for the existing cops would remain the same.
I think that what we're entering into is a case where they would probably have more cops on a shift, because it implies safety when you have more cops to people. It's a matter of them changing the ratios in the rules of the police, whatever that rule book is, to like provide better coverage or something, instead of properly monitoring hours to people out on the, they would just change zoning.
Yeah, this is turning into just like speculation.
Absolutely.
So
I'm curious to see if that's given you all something to think about. The other side of Rahm Emanuel is his reputation with education,
which is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that happened a few months ago was that he stated that all high school graduates, potential high school graduates, in order to get their degree, needed to be able to confirm that they were going to college or getting a job. And it's just like another one of these perfect examples of one of these things that's like founded weirdly in democratic theory, but then is so rife with bureaucracy that it becomes an issue. Because like, not everyone, like the idea that everyone, that we, that the idea that more people are potentially not leaving high school unemployed is a good idea, and it is a goal that we could and should be striving for, right? But the idea of, instead of funding the school, you're gonna put a restriction on folks getting their degree, that's That's regressive. That's prohibitive. That's an issue. That's overregulation.
Well, and also it puts strain, because what people are, you know, people are saying, well, in Emmanuel's defense, any graduate of a CPS high school,
mm-hmm.
Is immediately admitted to a city college.
Yeah.
Is it free? Is it for free or no?
I don't know.
That I don't know. Yeah, but I do know that they are by default admitted to a city college. Yeah. And so it's, you know, they're saying, well, they should, if, you know, just to, you know, they should just enroll in the college, you know, even if it's just for a semester, just to get that high school degree. And what that's doing is putting additional strain on the resources of an already suffering city college mm-hmm. system. You know, let's say that it is only for a semester, then you have all of these kids that you have to enroll, which takes hours from the administrative staff. It takes, you know, hours of scheduling and fitting these kids into these classes and stuff. And then all of a sudden, you know, you think that, you know, you're going to get some tuition payments from these kids, but then they all drop out the mm-hmm. following semester. So all that work and all those man hours were for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that actually also segues into another aspect of the Rahm Emanuel mayoral status right now, which is what's going on post. This is what I was alluding to before, but then realized that I didn't finish my point about the Trump lawsuit. But so we covered this last week, the SB1, Rahner's veto of SB1, which is the school bill.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically for mm-hmm. teachers and pensions and things. But in the last day, and today actually, the city of Chicago laid off,
oh,
like something like 650 teachers.
That was 985.
I think it was 600 did one thing and then 300 another.
You texted it to me.
Oh, I did. That's right. That's what I'm looking for right now. Sorry. While I pull up the actual information. But the thing about that is, like, so Rahm is now blaming the fact that Rahner hasn't passed a budget in Illinois, but Rahner hasn't passed a budget in Illinois for 3 years. So at this point, like, shouldn't you have been thinking about a way to locally fund these schools in a way that actually works besides, like, a bag tax for 7 cents a bag? I mean, like, we've been talking so much about...
Does the bag tax go toward education?
Oh. I don't... No, sorry. I don't mean to... I'm not, like... I don't know. I think they've said it does, that a portion of it will. 950 Chicago public schools employees. 350 of them were teachers. So, yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Were yeah, there's a quote.
Were they all art teachers?
I don't know. Maybe.
Probably.
Probably. Probably.
You know they're not going to be STEM teachers.
I mean, yeah, I guess not. I mean, the thing that is really, like, tricky is I've blanked. Wow, riveting episode today, folks.
I mean, we're covering a lot. Jumping around. Jumping.
Jumping. This is what I was going to say. We've covered a ton of, like, progressive taxing thoughts on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to somebody recently about the idea of property taxing. And just a land value tax. Just get on that land value tax, man. Especially in Chicago. Like, we could be funding so much more than we're doing, but, you know, then it's a matter of where's that funding gonna go.
Stop holding things. You keep dropping things.
Where's that funding gonna go? To more SWAT team shit? To more riot gears for protests?
Yeah. Yeah, who knows?
I think that's the hardest thing about the Trump presidency right now, is that you have these kind of like milquetoast, middle-of-the-line folks getting to be radical because it's so easy. The bar is so low.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd generally like want to hear from people is like, what can we be doing about... Because it's like all well and good for us to sit here for a half an hour and critique Rahm for, as progressives. But then it's like you almost want to go to bat for him sometimes because people are so terribly Islamophobic and just like so far the other way. Yeah. And especially in the Midwest, like a place like Illinois.
I think that it goes back to, I don't remember if we talked about, we did talk about this in the car episode where, you know, someone recently posted a thing saying like, you know, get ready to not be excited about the next Democratic candidate.
Yeah.
And I think that can be applied to our current serving politicians.
Mm-hmm.
Where to a certain extent, yes, we need to get, you know, we have what we have until the next election cycle. Like,
yeah.
Like these are the people that we are currently working with. And so if we hope to enact change right now, or if not enact change, then prevent changes for the worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? These are the cards we have been dealt. These are the people that we have at our disposal who have the power to prevent these things. And so we can be angry and critical and, you know, notice what these people are doing wrong and remember that at the next election. But you also have mm-hmm. to remember that Rahm Emanuel specifically is a Democrat.
Yeah.
And although he's doing fucking stupid things for education and is hawkish and, you know, bullheaded and aggressive and weird, like, he does hold a lot of other democratic values
mm-hmm.
where a lot of other people don't.
Yeah.
Especially in Illinois, especially in the Midwest. And so, in that respect, you're right. You know, we do kind of have to go to bat for him. And the fact is, he's suing Donald Trump right now.
Yeah.
Which is great. It's great. He's suing him for a reason that isn't the best. He's suing him to get funding.
For SWAT.
What he's doing is he's setting a precedent for other sanctuary cities to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I the next thing I'm going to look up and report back on on this show is if all sanctuary cities are being denied specifically police force funding. Because that's a weird thing for him to do, Trump, I mean, to be like, I'm worried about safety for cities, for sanctuary cities specific. So like for a second, do the like, all immigrants are the devil. Yeah, logic, which is terrible logic, but
I would be surprised if the only benefit of being a sanctuary city in terms of federal funding would be funding for like tactical gear for the police force. Yeah. I imagine that it would be like up to the city to decide what they're going to use any federal funds.
Right.
Or any federal benefits that come with being a sanctuary city. But that being said, I am not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be surprised if that money, no matter what, goes toward tactical gear. I personally am tired.
Okay. Can I do one more thing and then we'll close? I just want to give the rundown of the stuff that happened at that convention in Chicago. Is that cool? Just quickly. I'm not planning on going into any details.
Sure. Go for it.
For those that don't know, I think I mentioned this on the show, the Democratic Socialists of America had their convention in Chicago. There were three major resolutions that passed, which I thought was really interesting. So this is just in case anyone else is interested in this beat. one of the first major ones was that they left the Socialist International. That was specifically because there were a few organizations as part of this. So for those that don't know, in a lot of socialism, there are these kind of international movements to bring the countries together. It's a pretty pro-globalization platform. So there's always kind of like these things that try to be umbrella groups for all of these socialist organizations. But the Socialist International specifically, I mean, it's been running for a really long time, but it just supported a few, apparently it supported a couple really terrible regimes, and so they've been planning on getting out of the Socialist International for a while. So that's something to check out and kind of do your own research on and write into the show if you learn anything I don't know. The other thing was that they endorsed BDS, which is the Boycott, Divest, Settlement movement, which for those that don't know, is the idea of boycotting Israel. And I don't want to get into the specifics of that either, because I'm in no way, shape, or form an expert. But I highly recommend, I mean, I really like Noam Chomsky on that topic. I think he's pretty nuanced and pretty informative. But, you know, it's an interesting parallel to what's going on in mainstream politics, because there's actually a bipartisan movement, and it's not, it doesn't have the majority, but to make the boycott, divest, settlement movement, not settlement, I don't remember what the S stands for, the BDS movement, a felony if you publicly support the movement, which is kind of fucked up, because like America was founded on boycott. I mean, like, look at the Tea Party. Not the Tea Party, the group. I mean, the actual...
the Boston Tea Party.
Right. And then the third really cool thing was they elected a national policy committee. And it was 50% women, 50% male. I think 5 queer and then 11 straight cis or something like that. They also formed a POC caucus, meaning like a group inside of the DSA that is specifically for POC to talk about POC issues, which is really cool. It seems like it's just an interesting thing. Something we talked about too is, you know, it seems like the people that are on Twitter or on Facebook that are like promoting left book or like leftist movements seems to be mostly white, straight, cis, and male. And so it's really exciting to hear that it isn't that's not where the statistics fall in the actual committees, you know, in the actual people that came out to the event and stuff. Like, it was a lot more diverse and a lot more interesting, and it's kind of the cornerstone of what the DSA is supposed to stand for, is this you know, inclusive platform. So yeah, that's what I got.
Cool.
Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we're up to, there are so many ways that you can do that. You can head over to scopymag.com. That's our website. We're going to have some new articles up over the next couple weeks. We're really excited about that. Otherwise, you can head over to Facebook under Scopy Magazine, and on the other social media places, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr, you can head to Scopy Mag. That's S-C-A-P-I-M-A-G. You can also head over to YouTube. Find us under Scopy Magazine. We have a channel there. We post all of our videos from all of our performances there.
Cool. And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. Everything that we've been able to do up to this point has been through your generosity. So first of all, thank you. Second of all, we need a little bit more help. So if you go to our website, scopymag.com, you can head to our About section. You can become a monthly subscriber or a one-time donor. If you are a one-time donor, you will get our endless appreciation and also a handwritten thank you note if you consent to us having your mailing address. If you become a monthly subscriber, there are some cool things that'll happen. First of all, if you are our next donor, our next monthly subscriber, then you get to choose between a 30-day all you can, like, zen, you know, pass to Be Yoga Andersonville. This is a really awesome yoga studio, kind of on the border of Andersonville and Edgewater. It's, you know, you can take the Clark bus there. It's great. It is a wonderful place. I think that it is silly that no one has claimed that. But you can choose between that, or you can choose between a bag of coffee from Half Wit Coffee, which is awesome. And we're actually going to have someone from Half Wit Coffee come on and talk to us about kind of the craft coffee industry and about, like, sourcing coffee, which is something I'm super, super, super interested in. So, yeah. And actually, we're doing this fun thing for our current donors, because we love you and we appreciate you, that if you can guess either my or Daniel's preferred flavor note in coffee, then you also get a bag of Half-Wit Coffee. And we realized that we looked at the flavor wheel and we were like, ooh, there are a lot of flavors on here. Perhaps this is kind of hard. So we're going to give clues. So Daniel, what's your clue?
My clue is that my flavor note is something that you could have for a meal or dessert.
My clue is that this flavor can be found in pie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. I have an update.
What's that?
While you were doing your donation, which you do so well.
Thank you.
I looked up the wording of the bill that specifically the house, so it was a house bill that was passed in the house about, that specifically was about the sanctuary city defunding.
Okay.
Is
this the federal house or the state house?
Federal house. So this was in conjunction with a Trump, either executive order or maybe just a tweet. I mean, they're basically the same thing. Right. but basically the language of the bill is specifically that, the grants, the provisions in the bill would not be eligible for certain Justice Department grants, specifically related to law enforcement, terrorism, national security, immigration, or naturalization. So yeah, it is specifically they're specifically police bills.
No, they're not.
Justice Department. Which, I mean, it's just the Justice Department.
Well, the Justice Department isn't just the police. Yeah, it's but not.
It's police, it's ICE. The thing is, the Justice Department budget is mostly police and ICE. I mean, and the courts to some extent, but they're not, like, funding the courts, are they?
Yeah, they are, but funding, I mean, like, public defenders.
The grants are specifically for, like, ICE and police. Okay, so we paused. I know it's like the end of the episode, but I wanted to get it all straight. So we looked it up, and so basically we clarified if there was any confusion.
Well, because the reason I was arguing with Daniel is that I didn't realize that he was saying that all cities get this funding and that this bill now
takes this specific funding away.
Because we were talking about what the earlier we were talking about what the benefits of being a sanctuary city are. I thought he was saying that the benefits of being a sanctuary city was like specifically funding for that stuff.
Right.
Which is why I was arguing with him.
Yeah, no. So my point before was that, like, it's weird that that's what the bill was, because it's like, if you are worried about immigration and, like, why would you then defund the thing that is the thing that's like
that enforces immigration.
Right. Yeah. It's just a weird, it's just like weird Republican logic I don't understand.
Well, I think it's coming from a similar place of Trump, like Trump's whole, like, well, then I guess let's just let Obamacare fail on its own.
And then how it actually is failing on its own is that he's defunding it.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, I do want to go to bed.
Yeah, so. let's close up. So thank you all so much for listening. Oh, sorry. No, we did. I know we did the closing. I was just gonna say, go out and make something.
Oh, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Thanks so much for listening. Go out and make something.